Sports Guy, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host Danny Santarella. Danny, how are we doing this evening?
I'm fantastic.
I mean, we had a big week.
Yeah.
I mean, since the last time you and I met here in the studio, mm-hmm. we've recovered by the post,
yeah.
which is old hat for us. And then we wake up, I'm starting my cell phone's blown up, and the ESPN picked up our little thing.
It's not even news anymore, though.
No.
Just everyday kind of operation.
And already our producer, Tony D's big league us. He's going like the Caribbean. True story. And Neil's out in L.A.
Yeah.
Doing things, like doing way better things in life than we're doing.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think this is a lot more important than either one of them are doing.
It's probably true. I mean, who knows what he's doing? He's doing some sort of comedy fest?
I tell you every week what a star he's going to be. And every week you agree, but you still doubt me.
I do doubt
he's
you.
He's going to be huge one day.
I know. Well, you know what? I mean, we know what Tony D is.
Yeah.
He's a jerk, but a great producer. The glue of the show. We know what Neil is. He's a fantastic performer.
Yeah.
You are changing. You have changed. Your evolution since you've been on the show. I mean, you would consider yourself a traditionalist through and through.
Yeah.
You wrote an article the other night. And now you haven't been drinking for what? Probably a couple weeks now.
3 weeks.
And I don't buy that. Because either you're supplementing that with something else. Because all of a sudden, I get a little email, a new article on the site. And it's an article about golf.
Yeah.
That Mr. Traditionalist over here wants to add a fifth major. Now, we have to get to incognito. We got to get to a lot of things. But we got to start with this. You genuinely want to have a fifth? This is Danny Santarella. Wants to just, dude, another major.
Yeah.
Everybody going to get a trophy next year, too?
I think everyone should get one. I watch golf year-round.
Yeah, you like
golf.
It, yeah.
I'm a terrible golfer.
Yeah.
As people out there that are playing golf make me sad. But I love golf. And I find this time of year to be perplexing to me because the events are just so boring. I mean,
of course,
I watched the European Tour event.
Do you actually watch those, like, non?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if they're on at, like, 3 in the morning or something like that from, you know, China or Japan, I'll tape them. I'll tape them and watch them later. And I just can't grasp the fact that this is all they can do.
They're seasons. Why can't there just be an end to the real season?
Well, they're used to kind of be. Now they have this the first year of this new wraparound schedule where these points count for next year and things like that to try to make.
So these are real turf. I don't know.
To try to make the field better. And, for example, a couple weeks ago in Vegas, Shriners Hospital, Children's Hospital tournament that they hold there every year.
Yeah.
The winner of that gets a spot in the Masters, and that wasn't always the case. So these events, they're trying to make them matter, but what they can't do is who is the big fish in the golf pond? It's Tiger Woods. Tiger's not playing. Tiger couldn't care less.
Yeah.
He could not care less. So
right.
What I'm saying is, you had Mickelson in last week's event. You had Rory McIlroy last week's event. You had a lot of guys that have won majors and things. It was a good event, but they can do more. They have to be able to do more. And that was kind of the tone of my article, which is let's get something different, something new, something more exciting.
So for people that didn't read the article, you were talking about expanding outside of the States.
Correct.
When would this occur? This would be somewhere like Southern Hemisphere, like you had mentioned. Did you mention Australia at one point? Something like that. I mean, logistically speaking, would this be the right time, like fall? I mean, you don't want to go up against bowl game, bowl weekends or any of that. Would this be the right time? Would it be maybe like Thanksgiving weekend where there's people, like, you know, it tends to be these events wrapping around, like we talked about off air, like the U.S. Open being around Father's Day, you know, those kind of be. I mean, what are you thinking? What timing are you thinking for this fifth major?
I in the article, I believe I said October to November. I mean, you're dealing with summertime down there. You know, I mean, you're going to get good weather. And I mentioned in the article that, you know, you have the three majors, the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the PGA, all contested in the United States, and then you obviously have the Open Championship contested in the U.K. Nowhere else on Earth has there ever been a major.
Yeah, South Africa, obviously South Africa, a lot of
you
golfers.
Have so many major champions from those places, so many guys that would be tremendous ambassadors.
Asia.
Absolutely. I mentioned Gary Player, the 9-time major champion. If you had one on the Horn of Africa or something like that, whether it's South Africa, Zimbabwe, Angel Cabrera's won two majors down from Argentina. There's nothing. And I just think you had Chen Ling Guang.
This might be ignorant of me. Do they have premier courses in, like, Argentina, like, that can host a major?
Cabrera finished the Masters this past year, runner-up in the playoffs, Adam Scott. And the next week he was playing in a huge event down there in Argentina. So I'd imagine it's a nice course for him to go play. I mean, he got, like, 100 par, so I'd imagine it's a difficult course. Well, all I'm saying is you have the 14-year-old kid from China, Chen Ling Guang, last year in the Masters, make the cut at 14. And it was the biggest story. And the PGA has done nothing to ride that wave. Nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm saying China is booming in a million different ways, and especially in golf now, in the sports world. Let's get some tournaments there. I mean, the European Tour is the only ones that are there.
Yeah.
Why can't the PGA expand to Australasia or South America?
But does it have to be a major?
I think it would be great if it was a major.
But does it have to be? Could they just have a big purse there, and would that attract the Tiger Woods?
No.
It probably would, even a big purse.
No.
Even if it made it a big deal that it's like their first –
no.
You know, venturing out. I don't know. I mean, there's no way that the PR machine of the PGA Tour can convince them, look, we need you. We're going to get you to guarantee you this kind of money and open up endorsement deals. I'm sure he already does fine in China. You don't think, you think it needs to be a major for it to be taken seriously by the big time players?
I think it would need to be a major, in my opinion, because you look at the Players' Championship, they say that that's the fifth major, quote unquote, and it's not.
Yeah.
Play down at the TPC Sawgrass in Florida.
Yeah.
And it's a cool event. It's got the little island hole.
Yeah, everybody knows it from playing Tiger Woods golf.
Absolutely.
The only reason I know Sawgrass is.
I own it in that game.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
You just go right, just fire at the pin?
Right. But that's not the fifth game. And when Freddie Couples got on the Hall of Fame, I'm sure everybody said he won the Masters and two players, which is like winning a major. I said, no. It's not. Would you rather be Fred Couples or would you rather be Angel Cabrera with two majors? I mean,
everybody around the game.
Yeah, so I think now is the time. The next few years, they're banning the long putter, I think, in 2015 or whatever it is, 16.
He was so angry about that.
I can't stand it. I don't see why that.
Yeah, I don't understand why that. I mean, is that something as a tradition that bothers me?
The long putter?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't bother me at all. What bothers me is that's the focal point now of the PGA Tour and the Royal Nation over there in the UK is the long putter when there's a million other things you can do to grow the game, and now they're going to tell guys like us, I know I stink. You told me you stink at golf, okay? So if I can go out there and shoot 110 with my short putter and cut five strokes off my game using a long putter, now you're telling me I can't?
Yeah.
I can't because the USGA, the PGA, the RNA are all telling me that I'm a clown. I'm saying focus on areas where you can grow the game and not cut the game down. I have no problem with
that. Yeah, it really doesn't make sense. I haven't really been following that whole story. I know that, you know, they talked about it. I only watched the majors, and even that, it's just sporadic, you know, maybe just Sunday or some Saturday stuff. But, yeah, I was just fascinated by that. Like, why is there this up? Was there a groundswell of players that were aggravated by it? It's not like the guys that use those long players are just dominant. Like, you know, they're so far away, it's like they're using a fork bat, you know?
I think over the past few years, what they found was you had a lot of guys from majors with those long players. You had Keegan Bradley, you had Ernie Els.
Ernie Els was always good.
No, I know that. But then Ernie Els, after he won those three majors, he hit a big wall. His putting was atrocious. He went to the belly putter, and all of a sudden now, you know, he was the beneficiary of Adam Scott falling apart at the Open Championship 2 years ago. But if it was a competitive advantage, like a metal bat in baseball, if they made it so you could use a metal bat in the major league, who wouldn't use a metal bat in the major league?
Yeah.
Everybody. It'd be a competitive advantage for the hitter. If it's a competitive advantage to cut with a long putter, then Tiger Woods would be using it.
Well, right, exactly.
Phil Mickelson would be using one.
Right.
So I don't see it as a competitive advantage because it calms your nerves or does whatever. I just think if they're getting rid of it, fine. Okay, fine. I'm not going to, like, put up a huge fight about it.
Yeah.
But focus on bettering the game.
Yeah.
Not cutting down on guys like us that want to go out there and then we're using a long putter with 40 handicaps that people tell us that we're cheating.
Yeah, right. Now you're going to hear that.
Yeah. So just –
there's going to be courses that aren't going to lie.
Add a tournament, add a major, do something big, have a big feature event, have a $10 million purse outside of the FedEx Cup.
That's such a change, man.
Do something big.
I'm not drinking.
I'm focused. Canvas starts on Friday. I'm very excited.
You're a new man. You know what it was? I think it was Neil Falk. Like, what is America? That depth of insight. You started just really thinking about things. What is golf?
I think about Neil.
What is sport? You really do.
All the time.
Just driving around on like a Saturday morning, going to get a cup of Joe, and like you're just thinking, like, pick up the post, and you're like, yeah, what would Neil be doing? Clearly he's sleeping.
Yeah, his work motivates.
He really is.
Be honest.
And now he's got the gray handlebar mustache, which is money. He looks tremendous. Of course he does. That's why we used him on the site
that
he's on.
I love
that.
That photo was awesome.
It was just point blank. I mean, it was a selfie from about 3 inches from his nose, and it was fantastic. All right, well, why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and we'll get into the meat of the show, which is going to be, you know, a lot of NFL stuff. We're going to get into some hockey stuff, which I'm excited about. You like to poke fun at me like I'm like this like hater of the NHL, which I'm not. I like to tease the NHL a little bit. But we'll get into that. Hopefully we'll get into some nice guests later on. We've got nobody confirmed, but I think we're going to have a nice guest in the second hour. So stay tuned. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's wrong way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... What the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, tri-statesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tri-statesportsguys, or at tri-state_sports on Twitter. And Dan Santarello is now on Twitter. What are you, at Dan?
_Sant24.
There you go. You're
killing
it.
I need followers.
You got me and Cole.
Yeah.
Neil's not even following you.
I got Coach Ireland.
And following.
Ernie Banks.
PMing you.
Love that, man.
All right, well, speaking of Tony D, who's not with us, he's actually probably en route to the Caribbean, where he's headed. He wrote an article, got a little bit of buzz on our website about the incognito thing, basically saying Jonathan Martin's a 24-year-old crybaby, which angered some folks. Now, you read the headline, and before I click that on my phone, what are you doing? But then when you read the article, it's really not – he comes right after incognito because there's no excuse what he did. No excuse for bullying, you know. He said he had gotten bullied a little bit growing up. He understands all that. I think that my problem with the story is everybody just wants to jump on a side, like everything else. And you want to jump out in front of it and jump on a side early on. And as with every news story, whether it's a tragic news story like, you know, the bombing or the, you know, tragedy in Newtown, where like you jump on what you hear right now and then it starts trickling down. First it was a teacher, then it was this.
Yeah.
So you hear these initial reports, everybody wants to take a side on it. And it's bullying. To me, this doesn't fit the definition of bullying at all. Because bullying, to me, is just indiscriminately picking on somebody just for the sake of picking on somebody. This is not, to me, that case. Because, first of all, he's got some leverage, being that he was a second-round pick, Jonathan Martin, right?
Yep.
So he's got some money in the bank. He's starting, so he's got some leverage there. Any company I've ever worked for got some sort of HR manual, and they always, like right now, you know, working in construction, we have to sit through 2-hour workplace harassment, right? You got to sit through this thing, and there are all these crazy, stupid scenarios, but basically, at every step, they're saying, if you run into any of these problems, the first thing you do is go to your HR rep. Go to your HR rep, go to your boss, go to somebody, and he's in a position, it's not like the same as a sixth grade kid. He might be able to go to a teacher, but it's not going to stop the harassment outside the hall. This guy's in the confines of his workplace. Why is he not going to a coach or to HR or to his player's rep or to his agent even and saying, look, something's going to happen? So I'm not putting any fault. Clearly what Incognito did was ridiculous. But to me, it doesn't fit the definition of bullying because he was doing it, now the new report came out, because the coaches had said, we got to toughen this guy up. Now his methods of doing that clearly were insane, but I think he was doing it for, in his warped mind, for the good of the team. I think he was saying, this guy's soft, and I'm going to toughen him up. And 2 weeks earlier, they were best friends. So what's your take on it? First of all, does it fit the definition of bullying? And what's your take on Tony's idea that this guy's a crybaby? I'm not saying he's a crybaby, but kind of falling somewhere in between there. What's your take on it?
Well, I can tell you this. I experienced some bullying as a kid, and
right.
I know what that was like. I was a much smaller guy. I never grew as fast as anybody else or whatever. So I dealt with it, and now things are different. But, you know, do I think it's bullying? Not necessarily, because I think the deal is, you know, you go to the coach, you go to find another veteran. I mean, there's got to be somebody he gets along with, Martin.
Yeah.
Go to another veteran player. Tell him, you know.
Go to the quarterback. Tannehill sounds like he's Dumb as Rock. Sounds like, you know, just and when he was on Hard Knock, he didn't even know the division.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that. But, go to somebody. You agree with me that the motivations behind Incognito wasn't just to drag this guy down. Do you think that he was trying to, in some way, toughen this kid up?
I mean,
we saw the Jets, and boom, this is a problem we have with doing a show once a week. because I thought of this right away, was the Hard Knocks and the Jets were on, and Rex Ryan had the guy Turner, offensive lineman, pick a fight with Vernon Golston to try to make him, you know, toughen up. And they all loved it. And that's a player, apparently a commonplace thing in the NFL. So, I mean, do you think that his motivations were just to pick on this kid because he was different, or was it because, look, this guy's got potential, but he's got to be tough, and he's going to be on my line with me, and that's how it's going to be?
Well, I think, number one, it's tough because incognito teams are rather off-balance.
Did he go to school?
He was a Nebraska cornerback.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, Nebraska Lincoln.
Who did he play for?
I think it might have been Frank Solis, but I'm not positive. But it's tough to make heads or tails of someone who is kind of psychotic and what their motivations are. But do I think he's just looking to put the kid in the corner and, like, beat the hell out of him or something like that? No. I think on some level he might have seen the kid's got some ability or he's trying to toughen him up. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's something to me that – talk about Hard Knocks. I saw the one with the Ravens where Tony Siragusa was breaking chops with Patty about how much money he had.
Patty was a rookie.
He was taking food off his plate in the chow and all these other things. And okay, we both played sports. You deal with some of that stuff. But there is a time when it goes over the line. And obviously, I know you're not condoning it or saying anything positive about it. But the minute you start with the names he used, now you're out of bounds. If you're just in the locker room and you're telling the kid, you know, you're this or you're that, or you're calling him names to kind of degrade him a little bit. Okay, I mean, I get it. We've been there. But the minute you start with this over-the-top stuff, he's way out of bounds.
I don't think there's any dispute.
What would you do if you're Martin? Because my thought was, I look at it like, dude, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just stand up to him and tell him, here's what's going to happen. I might lose the fight, but here's what's going to happen if this persists.
That seems to be the prevailing thought among sports fans. Everybody calling up. You're a big dude. You want to go in there. Everybody's, you know, Tommy Tough Guy.
Right.
They would have stood up for him. You know what I mean? Including one of the things Tony said in his article. Why didn't he stand up for him? I just think that there's some people, I don't care what size you are, they're not fighters. I know the littlest guys in the world that will pick a fight with anybody. And I know big guys who were the victims of bullies growing up. And maybe you look at them, you're like, why are you letting this guy bully you? You're 6 feet and you're in the seventh grade. But they just get bullied. I think that you either have that in you or you don't have that in you.
I don't disagree, boy.
So I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know what you do. But it's not this. It's not just, wait. And the thing that was a tipping point was really a nothing thing. The fact that he sat down and everybody stood up. Tannehill said today in his press conference, yeah, they did that to me too. Like, that's just something you do. It's like somebody hitting their first home run. I mean, imagine, like, some guy hits their first home run and nobody gets an high five and he just leaves the team. Clearly, it had been a lot of things building up. The thing is, you go to somebody. You go to your agent. You go to somebody within the front office. You go to your coach. You go to your position coach. And you say, look, this is over the line. I'm willing to do these different things. This is over the line.
I think football, in the National Football League especially, forget high school or whatever, we're prone to believing that these guys have this switch, that they flip on a Sunday.
Yeah.
They have this warrior kind of way about them. That you look at a guy like Martin, who's in the trenches, a big, big dude, and you go, at some point, I'm not saying what I would have done, because I don't know, but I'm just saying, at some point, a football player, we're not talking about, like, some other little, like, you know, where there's pansies running around. These guys are some of the toughest guys in the world, athletically speaking.
Yeah.
That he would stand up and go, all right, I've had enough. That's all. I don't know the kid personally. I'm just saying, you tend to think these football players can flip this switch like they do every Sunday morning and go, goodbye to the wife and kids, and you're going to be a gladiator for three hours, and you're just going to, you know, be as tough as nails. And then he's taking this from a guy who's in his size range.
Yeah.
So to me, it's tough. I mean, I look at it and go, just say something to him. Maybe he did. I don't know.
I don't want this to come off like I'm defending Incognito.
No, I don't.
But maybe I don't think there is a switch that could be switched. I mean, some people had. Obviously, you got a guy like Reggie White, who was like a saint off the field, or Deke Jones or something like that. But then they're nasty on the field. And they can flip that switch, but a lot of people can't. And I think a lot of people, like a guy like Martin, was able to have enough physical just talent to succeed at a place like Stanford. But you get to the NFL, and you need that edge. And I think maybe in his warped mind and how he went about it was the wrong way, but Incognito was like, I got to get this guy angry. I got to get this guy to have that switch, and not just have to flip the switch, to have that anger all the time. And that's why he's doing these type of things. I got to get under this guy's skin enough where this is where, you know, I'm going to enrage him, and rage on the football field is the right thing to have. For an offensive lineman, I think you want to have that. I mean, I always look at a guy like Vlad Dukas, who did fantastic at the combine, and he did all these things, at a smaller school. And then he gets there and you watch him, and he just seems off. He doesn't attack block. He doesn't attack on run block. And you're just like, maybe he just doesn't have it. Vernon Golston was the perfect case. The guy looked like a stud on the sideline with his shirt off, but you get him on the field, he doesn't have that instinct. And so clearly his methods were crazy, but I think that the motivation behind it was to bring out a nasty side to this guy, which makes it not bullying, because it wasn't just indiscriminately saying, I'm going to make this guy's life miserable for no reason. I don't think that that was the case, from what I heard, and none of us know.
Yeah, but I mean, I've heard stories over the years, and I think Rodney Harrison was one of them, where he said it was very difficult for him at the end of a game on Sunday, or whenever the game was, to go home, be with the family, and shut off that switch, that competitive, I got to really stick my nose in there and be a tough guy. So all I'm saying is I've never gotten ready for a Sunday afternoon in the National Football League, so I don't know what that's like. But I'm just saying, without knowing either guy individually, personally, I tend to think there's something in those football players, like a hockey player, where once that puck is dropped or that ball is kicked off, you're a little different. So maybe Martin, to your point, maybe Martin is different. Maybe he's a quiet kid. Maybe he's shy. Maybe he's not prone to standing up for himself. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, to me, it gets to be so ridiculous that these guys can't go in. They're all great football players.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chess.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, all right, we're back. Again, without Tony D, we're having a little technical difficulties. For some reason, we dropped us. I couldn't even play the commercial, so I don't know about that. Hopefully, we'll get that thing buttoned up shortly. But I don't know how much of it got cut off. Hey, everybody. I don't know what the hell's going on now. We got no we no idea without Tony D what's happening. We're just going to – maybe we'll just play the hit. We'll play Dr. Dre.
Let's do it.
We'll just have like a little throwback Wednesday night. You see Dr. Dre. We got some Beasties on here. We could just keep playing the Ernie Banks clip over. Everybody, it's the Tri-State Sports Guy coming to you live midway through the show from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. Dan, how great are we at this job? I mean, how great are we to be able to do the producing and hosting? Hopefully we get some big-time caller calling in right now so I can throw this computer through the wall.
I was saying when we got cut off before, I'm actually afraid of you right now.
You want to talk about bullying? We're in the middle of talking bullying talk. And Maron, this thing keeps going out. I have no idea when it went out.
I'm pretty sure I could win a fistfight with you, but not right now.
No shot.
Right now, I'm terrified.
I want Holyfield.
Mike is not happy right now. Just let everybody know that.
You know what's going to make me happy?
Yeah.
We talked to nobody for the last 20 minutes because nobody was listening because we got cut off about this Incognito story and Jonathan Martin and all that. You know why it makes me slightly happy? Because of A, because I'm a bad guy.
Right.
B, because I'm a Jets fan who hates the Dolphins. Like, hates the Dolphins. I hate the Pats, too. But growing up, the Pats stunk, so the team you hated was the Dolphins. And so now I'm looking at the Dolphins team who's coming off a big win there in Cincinnati. And I'm saying to myself, well, now they just lost. Their offensive line already wasn't good. They already were getting, Tannehill was getting beat around. And now they just lost 40% of their offensive line, probably for the season.
Yeah.
And they're just in shambles. And they're going down to Tampa in a game that, looking at a Jet fan, that's a slam dunk. I don't even know what the odds makers do in that game now.
Be off the boards right now.
Yeah, I would assume it's off the boards right now. So, I mean, looking at how it actually, this football-wise, impacts the landscape of the AFC, I mean, does this just eliminate them, or is there a possibility of them galvanizing around this cause? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to eliminate them, but I think certainly it throws a wrench into things. You know, I mean, you alluded to the fact that two of their five offensive linemen now are not going to be playing, and, you know, you have all this stuff going on with the Incognito Martin deal and everything. So do I think it eliminates them? I don't think you can say it eliminates them. You don't know what they can do or what kind of stuff building could put together or whatever. But I think it's certainly, if you're a Dolphins supporter, you have to be concerned more than you were to say,
yeah, they were just living on a dream there.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm thinking going into that game, knowing the whole Martin thing happened, going to that Thursday night game, like they have no shot in this game.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I mean, they've blown that lead, but they get the big safety there in the end zone. And you're like, wow, are they really going to do this? But now without Incognito and with the fact that they really haven't focused on football at all, one of the things Tannehill said was it's all we've been talking about. In the locker room, amongst ourselves, when we step foot on the, you know, anybody that possibly knows this has been texting me about this situation. Anybody has my cell phone number. So this has got to be a huge distraction.
You know what's interesting, though? You just said that they're all talking about it, and that's all they're talking about. And you alluded to the fact before that Tannehill says, like, yeah, they did this to me. This stuff goes on here.
Yeah.
So then you led to believe that it goes on all the time, so why are they concerned now? Why is it this big talking point now in the locker room? Is it because everybody knows? Or is it because Tannehill's blowing out of proportion what they did to him, and in fact what they did to this kid is twice as bad as anything that was done to Tannehill or any other young players?
Yeah, I get the sense. Obviously, listening to what they say, is that they're almost like laughing about it.
Yeah.
I get that sense that they're sitting in the locker room like, do you see the stuff that this crazy bastard said to him? And like, you know, remember when we made that dude give us $15,000? Like, what would have happened if he didn't pay that $15,000? I mean, he wasn't there even. It wasn't like they just threw his credit card down and, like, he was forced to pay the bill. The dude wasn't even on the trip to Vegas. And they're like, hey, just small bills unmarked in a duffel bag.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think that they're kind of laughing about it. It's just hard. It's going to be hard for the coaching staff to refocus. You know, right now, instead of watching film or breaking down whatever film you want to break down of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Philbin's got to deal with this and talk to the HR department of how they're going to handle this. Deal with a league investigation and all that, and every minute spent doing that is a minute spent not prepping for this week's game.
Yeah, you know, I always find it interesting because I think about teams I was on, or, you know, think about teams you were on. And let's say a couple of your teammates get in trouble, they did something, something along these lines happens, if you're playing baseball. You're still putting in your work, you're still in the cage, you're still long tossing, you're still running, you're still doing all the work.
Crushing curveballs.
That's all you're doing. You were always a good breaking ball. That's what you do. I understand now these guys have the added pressure of the media being on their tails, but at some point, don't you go into the office and do your work and get it done and game plan for the next team, and then when that game's done, you game plan for the next week? I mean, shouldn't at some level these guys be looked at as professional? They're professional sports players. That's what they do, is play a sport for a living. So you wonder, like, Tannehill's walking around the whole office is there, and he's just walking into a room where he's supposed to be breaking down, like, you know, the defense is covered too. And he goes like this. He goes, boy, that's something with Incognito, isn't it? And they're trying to put film on the overhead. He's going, what about Richie? Richie's some son of a gun.
Yeah,
so, like, don't you have to do some work? Can't you, at some point, don't you have to not use this as some excuse and get ready because you're getting big bucks to play? Don't you?
I agree with you. Yeah. I think the impact on the rest of the team isn't going to be as great as some people make it out of. But the impact of losing 40% of your offensive line is something you can't sneeze at, and the impact on the coaches. I mean, there's only so many hours in the day to sit there and do this. And, you know, knowing
I don't know. I think any coach is just a crazy bastard in and of themselves that's going to put that kind of time into doing this. But and now they have to deal with this on top of that. And then, you know, they have to do special meetings and all this stuff. And, you know, there's, in addition to the talks that they're having internally amongst themselves and the organization and with the NFL, they have to have team meetings, talk about it, talk about your feelings, you know.
Sensitivity training.
Yeah. You know what we need in HR handbook? Charity sports guys. Because this is, we are one more freaking internet problem away from things really getting ugly on my end.
It might be you committing a homicide. And I'm just going to be unlucky enough to be here.
And nobody else is here. Tony C's down sipping my guys.
Right.
Neil's out there just hobnobbing with producers, wherever he's doing. And here I am, just rubbing 2 sticks together trying to get my word out there.
You did a great job, though.
You think so?
Can I talk about that for a second?
I just really don't think so.
Because you looked at me and you go, any ideas? You look at me and you go, any ideas, question mark. And I looked at you and go, bro, you got the wrong guy. And what Mike DePalma did putting this whole thing together was a patchwork job, but it's functional now. So I'm proud of you. I want to let you know that. I'm just telling you that now. I am proud of you. If I was here by myself, I'd be on your driveway right now, just, you know, getting ready to go home.
Back on the bottle. All right. We're done talking about Richie Incognito. We're going to come back and talk about the Jets' big win. We're going to try to hook up via Skype so we get a little clearer,
yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. We've got a couple callers waiting patiently on hold, which I can't wait to get to. So we're the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Mike, what is your deal,
oh,
man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
Hey, we're back, Tri-State Sports Guys. Hopefully this is coming just clear streaming through the airwaves.
Right.
I'm hoping. Probably not. I'm probably going to have to call in via cell phone again. But we got a couple callers who have been waiting patiently on hold, listening to me just spin records. It was really what I was doing.
Yeah.
We had a little Mass Appeal. We had a little Dr. Dre. Betty White just chimed in. So I'm excited to take a call and see what we've got. So we're going to go out to line one. He's been on the hold for 3 minutes. We'd like to get to him. You are on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this? Hello, you're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this? All right, going once, so we probably still have some technical difficulties, but that's all right. So why don't we just get into the New York Jets so I could cheer up just a little tad bit here?
Yeah.
Can we do that for a second?
Let's please. I need you to be cheered up.
I mean, just think about 4 short days ago, we're the toast of the town. We got freaky. We're on the ESPN, and now, you know, I can't even take a caller.
Yeah.
What has happened to
us? It's frustrating.
What is that? Yeah, a little bit, you think?
This is how important Tony is.
This is, I mean, if you want to talk about the glue,
Yeah, he's an important cog in the wheel.
But slightly. So we are back on now, I think. And so I want to talk a little bit about the Jets win because I think there was this kind of consensus amongst the experts that the Jets could hang in this game based somewhat on the, you know, on-again, off-again nature of their entire season. Somewhat on it was a decent matchup for them as they're kind of a smash-mouth team up front, can get in Drew Brees' face, and maybe they could run the ball a little bit. But as that game was progressing, I mean, as a Jets fan, you're taught not to really get optimistic about things, even as the game is progressing. But I just got the sense midway through the second quarter, I'm telling people at the bar, we're going to win this game. This is going to happen. You're looking at Chris Ivory running like a man possessed, and you know, you can see why he's always injured because he runs so angrily. And I had mentioned he kind of reminds me of like Marion Barber, the way he runs. He was also always hurt, but in bunches, you know, would look like really good. And so you watch him. I mean, when you're able to beat an offense like the New Orleans Saints, when your quarterback completes eight passes,
yeah.
Two of them to a guy named Salas, I believe it's Greg Salas. I know we have a great fan, Eddie Salas, who calls in every once in a while. I mean, it was an amazing thing. I mean, like you said, you didn't watch the game, but you've obviously seen highlights and stuff. I mean, what were your thoughts going through the game? Was this the model that they were going to need to use that they executed? And, like, did it still shock you to this day as we're sitting here on Wednesday after the game?
Well, I told you before the show I was a little under the weather on Sunday, and I took a little cat nap in the afternoon. I woke up,
and I saw the 26-20 score. And I told you, I had to double-check it on other networks to make sure I saw what I saw, because I got to be honest, the Saints I can't stand since that NFC Championship game against my Vikes. I didn't think you had any chance to win the game. And then when I see the stats and I see the 8-for-19 passing and all that stuff, and I see how many yards did Breeze throw for? He was 30-for-52 or something like that, and 380 yards or something.
Yeah.
If you saw that stat line,
yeah,
you
win that game.
Score, you'd go, there's no way the Jets won this game. And then everything I read, all the interviews I saw, was just talking about the couple key turnovers the Jets forced and Rex Ryan's defense finally being a Rex Ryan's defense and all that stuff. And I think, as you know, I'm more about the Jets than I do, obviously, but that's got to be the calling card for that team, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be that defense. And it's got to be, if he's going to throw 8-for-19, that he doesn't kill the team,
yep,
throwing 8-for-19 with like
3 big run again,
yeah, right,
in the end zone. And then you look at their stat line, even on defense, you're like, wow, they only, if you just, like, you hadn't watched the game, they only sacked Drew Brees twice, and he,
yeah,
dropped back 54 times, or like whatever you said. And it doesn't seem great, but they were in his face all day long, which makes you start to believe you can get, I mean, in this league, in my opinion, obviously it's all focused on offense and really the passing game. If you can get corners like a Cromartie, who at times can lock a guy down, and you can get a pass rush that throws off the timing of these guys, that's the only way to counteract it. Because you're not going to be able to sit back and play zone,
right,
like the freaking Buccaneers want to do with Darrell Revis and win games. You have Darrell Revis, you're just wasting him away. The only way to really have a stout defense is to get in the face of the quarterback like the Chiefs do, and now like the Jets do, and have a guy you could just say, I'm going to throw you on an island out there and do your best. And, you know, you're going to have some pass interference calls and the rest, but that's it.
Just last week, the three of us were sitting here, me, you, and Neil, and we were discussing the final AFC wildcard spot. And we unanimously agreed upon the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah.
My question
just
for you.
Promptly. Go ahead.
My question for you. You see your Jets win a game like this against a team like the Saints, or, you know, I always try to be, you know, objective. That's an excellent team. I don't like them.
I think they're the best team in the NFC.
Yeah, they're a very good team, man. And I just wonder, does this now, do you venture into that territory of optimistic Jets fan in terms of you look at beating the Saints? That's, I mean, that's a marquee win.
Yeah.
You now sit there now as a diehard Jets fan, like I think I would, even though I never get up on my feet,
yeah,
and go, it could be the Jets. They could sneak into that last wildcard spot.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I never really bought into the fact that they had a chance because early on we knew their schedule wasn't tough. I wasn't overly shocked at some of the wins they had. Obviously, you didn't count Atlanta as a win, but now you see what Atlanta is. They always seem, in my opinion, to play the pass tough, so it doesn't shock me that they split with the pass. But to go out and win a game like this, and then you look at the remaining games, and you've still got two of the Dolphins who are in disarray right now, which going into the season I would have just been thrilled with a split. Now, you're a real team, and you look at that, what the Dolphins are right now, you've got to be looking for a sweep,
yeah,
right? So say you sweep them, you got the Bills, who, you know, like you said, they always play tough. You always say they always play tough games. You got to think you could go up to Buffalo and beat the Bills, right, coming off the bye especially. Now you've gotten yourself to 8 wins just with those games. And, you know, so they got back-to-back games coming off the bye. They've got 2 must-win games, which are going to be difficult on paper to go up to Buffalo and then go to Baltimore. The Baltimore Ravens just lost to the Browns. They got beaten up by the Browns. So let's not act like this is the Baltimore Ravens of 2012. I mean, they have plenty of winnable games left. And I'm not – I still am not going to be willing to say that they are going to win that 6th seed, mostly because you also look at the Tennessee, and they got to play twice against Jacksonville. They have the tiebreaker against the Jets. I think the Jets need to get to 10 wins to win that 6th seed. And then you're talking about another 5 wins here. You know what I mean?
You know what
so 5-2.
You know what it reminds me of, though?
What?
Seeing them and seeing, you know, as you said, I didn't watch the game, but you see where they're headed with a quarterback that's inconsistent and obviously young. You look at the Vikes last year, what they did with Ponder, making the playoffs, 10 wins, getting in, you know, with a quarterback that can't do anything. And you at least have a quarterback that has shown at certain times he can do some stuff.
Yeah.
So I look at it like everything you said, okay, but maybe this is that same model where it's a crappy Vikings team last year with the exception of, like, Peterson and a decent defense at times. Maybe the Jets now with a good defense,
yeah,
a quarterback who is Joe Montana compared to Christian Ponder,
yeah,
and, you know, a coach who, like, you know, you and I texted a couple weeks ago, they played for him. They play hard.
The idea that this
just,
guy
I mean,
is not
the how much
the
better
is he
than Leslie Frazier?
I mean, slightly better.
How much better?
I've been singing this guy's praises and then just getting crapped on all over our website, callers calling in, and I'm like, this guy is a great coach. He's not a good coach. This guy is a top 5 to 8 coach in this league. I'm telling you that right now. And the idea that he had this, you know, he had one losing season as a Jet and they're ready to kick him out of here. You're a coach of the Jets with no quarterback, no weapons on offense.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, ESPN picked him to finish 32nd of 32 teams, and he's got them right now 5-4, having beat the Patriots, having beat the, you know, New Orleans Saints, going to, on Monday night, going to Atlanta before all their crazy injuries and winning that game. And it's like, when is this guy ever going to get credit? It just shows you people get something in their mind, and they hate him, and there's no way around it. That's just that's how the world works, and it makes me frustrated. So it makes me almost as much frustrated as stupid show and his stupid website.
That sounded a lot like optimism. It really did. I mean, I got to tell you the truth. I've hated the Giants for a long time. I've never had a problem with the Jets. Most of the Jets fans I know are decent people. I'd love to see them make a push. And I think what I said before, you have more parts and a much better coach than the Vikings did last year. And the Vikings were in a division with the Packers, the Bears, the Lions, you know what I mean? And they found a way to get in with a quarterback who's totally inept.
Yeah,
I look at the Jets and I see that same kind of model where I go,
yeah,
here's a very young quarterback with skills, pieces
yeah
in place, and
so
a very
good,
very good defense.
Now what's making me apprehensive
yeah
even more about the Jets is, you know, maybe you don't know as much because you're new to the show, but probably my least favorite Jet that I can remember in my lifetime is Antonio Holmes.
Right.
I mean,
coming
I can't
back
stand the guy. Now, he's coming back.
Yeah.
Everybody is just thrilled about this guy coming back. And, you know, his last game that he played full, he did have a monster game. He made some big plays on field. It was the best game I can remember him having as a Jet, honestly. I know he's had better games statistically, but, I mean, making good plays downfield, making tough catches, runs after the catch. It's like why they wanted him. And you think on the surface, like, this is fantastic. I mean, they're piecing it together with David Nelson, you know, Greg Salas. They got the Sutfeld playing tight end. They're going to have, coming off the bye, they're going to have, hopefully, Santonio Holmes coming back. And, I mean, Curley's out for a few weeks. But, and they got Kellen Winslow coming back off of suspension. So, you're like, everything's falling into place. But I'm also of the mindset, and I know it sounds stupid on paper, like, why would you not want to add these pieces?
Right.
But it's just something about this guy. I don't like him on the team.
Yeah. You know, a couple of years
ago. Am I wrong for that?
You know, a couple of years ago with the whole insanity thing, and then Carmelo came back, and there were people like myself who were in an uproar like, dude, he's just going to throw a wrench into things. I know how good he is. He's going to throw a wrench into things. And for all the reasons you just mentioned, you do look at a guy like Holmes, and again, that's your team, so you know, and you go, boy, is he going to put pressure on Geno Smith now because he doesn't target him 8, 10, 12 times? Is he going to be crying and moaning in the locker room? Is he just going to – you know what I mean? So, I mean, you look at it and go, they're doing okay now. They just beat a very good Saints team. And you have all these talented pieces coming back. And then your trepidation is probably valid.
But it makes no sense, like, logically.
No, it doesn't.
Stupid thing to say.
Because you have
it's
a
like,
good player.
The Bulls are like, we don't want, you know, Derrick Rose to come back at this point in the playoffs.
Right.
And you're like, how could you not want a guy like Derrick Rose to come out? But sometimes it's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You get these pieces that are clicking, and now you've got a rookie quarterback who now is going to feel the need to go get the ball to Santonio Holmes. David Nelson's not in the huddle complaining about the fact that he's not getting the ball. You know, Sutfeld's not sitting there saying, I'm streaking down the seam and you're not hitting me in
yeah
the chest.
They're happy to be in the league.
Yeah,
really
thrilled
yeah
to be in the league. I mean, Nelson couldn't cut it with the Bills.
Yeah.
And so now they're like, they're just thrilled to be there. You know, they're filling in with all these different guys. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, you get now that's just another piece. It's like eliminating Jeremy Shockey. How could you be better off eliminating Jeremy Shockey when the Giants did that? But just because it's just another mouth in the ear of a rookie quarterback who doesn't need to have, you know, doesn't have, he's got confidence, but he knows his limitations. And so I am worrisome about that, to say the least.
Yeah, I can see it.
Right?
You look very concerned.
I know they're not going to lose this week, which is a bonus. But so, you know, that's kind of where I stand here. So I am not willing to say, I am willing to say that it will be exciting. We're going to be following the Jets in December, which I would have signed up for in a heartbeat before the season. I'm thrilled about it. And I think, you know, that's all you can hope for. I have tickets to the last game of the season in Miami. Me and my wife are going down to Miami. I've never been there. I'm excited about that. If that game means something, the idea that we bought these tickets back in June,
for that game is insane. The fact that I'll be down there, the only Jet fan down in the, you know, Joe Robbie, whatever they call it now, with my Chad Pennington jersey on. I hope somebody tries to bully me.
Take some pictures.
I hope one of these Miami folks try to bully me.
I just want to see Chad Pennington jersey. That's all.
That's it. I wear it well. You know, I fill it out nice now. When I bought it, it was a little loose.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a little young on me. But let's talk about the other team in New York.
Yeah.
Not the Bills.
Right.
The New York Giants. Now, the consensus seems to be this weekend that it was an awful weekend for the Giants because you had the win by the crazy nice comeback win by the Cowboys, and you had the other two teams in your division win. But my feeling is the win that the Dallas Cowboys had, you assume they were going to win anyway. But the fact that they had so much trouble in that game has got to be slightly a good sign for you. And now that they have to go out and play New Orleans this week, who just lost, do we think in our mind that New Orleans is going to lose back-to-back games to the Giants, to the Jets and then the Cowboys? I don't see it. Maybe. I just think that – so I don't see that as being a good thing, but it's not a bad thing that they pulled that game out. It would have been a gift if you hadn't had that, but I don't look at that and like, oh, this is an awful thing. Then you look at the Redskins. If you're worrying about the Redskins, then you're not going to win the division anyway because the Redskins aren't going to win the division. And then the other team, and I mentioned on the message board, is the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, this is a team that hasn't scored a touchdown in two games, and they come out and drop 49 points, seven touchdowns in three quarters for Nick Foles, and now everybody's like, they're back.
Yeah.
The only reason I put that out there is because, to me, that's a team that has a favorable schedule. They're going to get to play the Packers, which every Giant fan says the Packers are going to destroy the Eagles, but they get to play them this week with Seneca Wallace or whoever they're able to pick up in the next 2 days. So you got to think that there's a chance they could win that game. They've already played. They've already played the two games against the Giants. So you look at them and you're like, are they a team? So if you're the Giants, I don't think it was an awful weekend. Plus, they're going to get to play the Packers without Aaron Rodgers in 2 weeks. So what are your thoughts about the NFC East right now?
Well, I mean, I said it last week when we were discussing the Giants a little bit. I said, you know, I don't put anything past the Giants. I've seen what they've done in the past, and I look at it like, you know, so what you said, would you love to see all three of those teams lose? I mean, obviously. The Cowboys come back against the Vikes, whatever. You know, I don't even want to get
I had the Cowboys in my knockout.
Yeah, good for you.
Sweating it.
Yeah. It's just, you know. But, no, I mean, I see what you're saying about the Giants. I'm not completely confident that they can make this big, huge push. And I know that I praised them the first week before the season started in our preview session, this segment. But, I mean, I would lean towards the Cowboys. But would you be shocked if the Giants ran off a bunch of games in a row? I mean, really. I mean, if you really boiled it down, how shocked would you be if they just started to just win? Would it be that much of a surprise to everyone?
Here's the thing. Looking at the game, they have so many winnable games coming up. They really do. And then it's going to all crescendo with them playing the Cowboys
right.
in what will be a big game. That all being said, like, what have they shown, other than the fact that they, in the past Giant teams have shown that they're the ability to go on the run, what has the 2013 Giants shown any glimmer of an ability to go on a run? The two wins they have were not impressive.
No.
You know, the Monday night game against the Vikings was a joke. And then even the game against the Eagles was a game that you're just like, how are you not scoring against the Eagles defense? How are you settling for five field goals? So, I think they go out. They win this week. They got, you know, they play at home, I believe, against Oakland, and so I think they win this week. But you know, partly, you know, I have this is like the devil on each shoulder here. You know, I'm sitting there one side saying it's the Giants. You know, they can go on these runs. They do it. Look at their schedule. None of those teams are any good in their division. They could run this week. They could run the table and go 10-6. But then the other part of me is like a logical person who has actually seen this team in my own eyes and watched every one of the games this year. And you're like, this team can't. How is that team going to win, rattle off, you know, 8-10 here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but they haven't, they didn't look as bad in those past years when they made those great runs as they do this year. But I just look at it, and there's enough pieces that are the same, and I'm not going to get you going about Eli. I'm just saying.
He can't, I'm not an Eli guy. He can't keep playing it. I don't think he's this bad.
No, I mean,
yeah,
I
have
the last
a game
5 weeks. There's got to be a week at some point where he plays really well.
Yeah.
He is a good quarterback, you know. But
same thing with Hakeem Nicks.
Yeah,
it's going to be a game where Hakeem Nicks just is unstoppable because we've seen him be unstoppable.
I look at Coughlin and I say, the guy's done it twice.
Yeah.
The guy's done it twice. He's still there. He knows something that probably we don't know.
Yeah.
So can he patch together some of that defense? Can he get the offense to move the ball and not settle for 5 field goals? Can he do some of those things? And the answer, if I had to pick yes or no, would be yes, he can find a way with teams that aren't as good as those two Super Bowl teams, obviously. Can he find a way to make a run? I wouldn't put anything past the Giants. And really, to me, the big key part to that is Coughlin. If they got rid of Coughlin and there was a new coach, they brought Leslie Frazier in because somebody, like, you know, had an aneurysm in the front office and decided he was a good coach,
yeah.
I would go, they're just going to keep falling apart.
No shot, yeah. No, I mean, I think he's one of the few. As much as I like Rex Ryan, I still think Tom Coughlin's better. I think Tom Coughlin's a great coach.
Yeah.
And the idea when they were calling for his head before their last Super Bowl run was insane. You're not going to find somebody that does what he does. That's a great coach, a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, that's New York.
That's what they do, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to run Rex Ryan and Tom. I mean, when have the two New York teams had better coaches simultaneously than they have right now?
Lee Eubank and Ali Sherman.
Well, there you go. Ali Sherman was the guy I couldn't – he was on the tip of my tongue. Everybody knows Lee Eubank, but – yeah, I mean, but nothing's ever good enough.
No,
so that's just the way of the world, I guess. But yeah, it'll be a fun run for both teams.
I can't wait to watch the Jets.
You can't wait.
I'm curious.
This week is going to be like a killer to sit there on a bye week and not see. But you know, you also have the idea of like, is a bye week bad when you come off a good win? Is it? But then the other side is that they have one good week, one bad week. Is this bye week kind of like gobble up their one bad week? It's going to be really interesting. I'm sure they will win of these remaining games. There's going to be one where you say, how the hell did they lose that game?
Yeah.
And there's going to be one where they go to, like, Baltimore where they never seem to do well and they just dominate. You know, it's something like that. It'll be one of those type of things. And, you know, if they're playing meaningful football in the back end of December, I'm thrilled. I'm not a Giants fan who thinks it's always Super Bowl or bust, so I'd be just thrilled with it. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to talk about some hockey. I'm thrilled about. We haven't even talked about our debate topic yet.
I'm going to lace up my skates and get ready.
Maybe we'll do the debate topic. I don't know. We got to figure out really what we're doing here. But we'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports Guys commercial brought to you by Bud Light.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000-calorie salad.
Ah, caramba!
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried country bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Hey, hey, hey. We're back, Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, tristatesportsguys.com. We've got a lot of new content. I do want to plug, we have a live show next week. Down at O'Neill's restaurant in Norwalk.
Yeah.
A fundraiser. We're raising some money for the Norwalk Junior Football fifth graders. This team, not only are they undefeated, they won the state championship already. They've outscored their opponents like 250-30, right? So they got two wins to go. They got to play in the regional semifinals and the finals. They win those two games, they're going to Orlando for the Nationals. And so they got to raise like $25,000 now. We're not there yet. $25,000 will just fall out. Like, it's probably sitting there under the bleachers right now.
Yeah.
In Norwalk, $25,000 you got to scratch through that. So we're going to try to raise them some money. I'm going to put something up on the website if you want to donate. There's a PayPal account for the league set up. Anybody that listens, just kick in $25, $50, help them out. If you're a business, we're doing an ad book that night. So we have quarter page ads are $25, half page are $50, and full pages are $100. We'd love to have you. We've got a good raffle. Autographed football by Colin Kaepernick will be raffled off, which will be nice. And O'Neill's is donating 10%. Of the take that night to the football team. So just come down, have a couple cocktails next week. I'll put the address. It's somewhere on South Main Street in Norwalk, and it'll be a good time.
I'm excited.
So you're definitely excited.
I'm going to be drinking Shirley Temples and trying to eat as many chicken wings as I can.
Just cry. Because you know what? Because 10% of everyone else chicken wings don't eat.
It's
kids.
The teriyaki wings that get me. They're just phenomenal.
Dude, how did those, you know what? Irish food is not normally good.
No.
They've got this. Irish curry chicken.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a thing.
It's not a thing, but it's...
Oh, model. It is just outstanding. So please check us out. Head down there. But we want to get into some hockey talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple weeks. Now, you were, like, known as our hockey guy.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time you did your hockey talk was right before the season started. And you just whacked on poetically about the New York Rangers.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, you're not a little bit worried your team's starting out, you know, 8 games on the road. And that's going to impact you. You didn't seem too, you know, problematic about it. You said, oh, you know, they're going to start, but they're going to come back to the guard and blah, blah, blah. And then they got this awful start. And people weren't letting that be an excuse. Like, that's not the reason why. The new coach and, you know, King Henry's not figuring things out. And their line changes and all these. They're trying to shuffle around and figure out the right thing. And they started out awful. And then they started picking things up when, lo and behold, they get back home. Now, is it too simplistic of me being and not a hockey fan to make that just assumption that now you step back and look at where the Rangers are? I know they lost the Ducks that night. But you look at where they are and you say, yeah, they should have lost a bunch of games. It's not easy to open up your season 8 games on the road. Is that too simplistic?
Yeah.
Now, why is it too simplistic?
Because you're not supposed to go. It was a 9-game road trip. You're not supposed to go.
I don't even know how many games they're on the road.
What was it, 2-5-2 they went or something like that?
You tell me.
I mean, you're not supposed to do that with the talent that they have. People are going to point to the fact that the garden's all remodeled and they're back home and they're doing whatever. And I wrote the article the other day, and I still stand by it. When you look at Derek Stepan centering the line where he's flanked by Kreider and Zuccarello,
yeah,
that alone.
You love that line.
That alone has been the most fun line to watch. And I include in that the Vanek, Tavares, Okposo line for the Islanders. It's more fun watching that Rangers line because at least with the Islanders three, you know you have two superstars. Okposo's a very good player. These three young kids that Alain Vigneault is featuring as that top, their top line.
Yeah.
This is with guys like Richard Hagelin and Captain Callahan back now.
Yeah.
And that's his featuring line, getting 18 minutes a night as forward. To me, that is what's done it because those three guys, none of whom are known as like particularly physical players, are setting the tone for this Rangers team. And that was not a line that was together when they were on that road trip. That was not a line that was together. I mean, Kreider wasn't even up at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, he was lost. In
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you now have what every hockey team that's going to be a playoff team needs. You have that one forward line and typically one outstanding defensive pairing. The Rangers could pair those defensemen any which way. I love McDonough. I've been a huge fan of him forever. They've had him playing with Delzato, and they've been not quite a shutdown line, but you can see how well they move the puck.
Yeah.
But everybody making it about the garden. All that really gives you is the home crowd, which is great. It's a great fan base. And the last change after whistle. I mean, but it's that line, that lead line, the power play.
Yeah.
Everything they've had going. Lundqvist now has played well. He played well in the Ducks game.
Yeah.
You know, but the team did nothing in front of him. So.
Yeah, was that 2-1 game?
2-1 game. He played great against Buffalo last week in the 2-0 shutout. You know, they had the kid Talbot, Cam Talbot came up, and I thought he played well in goal. I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
And he's like their big goaltending prospect. But to me, it really is. It's the lead line. If you look around the National Hockey League, every team that's going to be anything has that top line.
And you think that line could be that?
I think when you see them the other night in the Ducks game where they lost 2-1, that line jumped off the ice at you. Because I saw Kreider in a couple situations putting pressure on the puck, and this is a kid known as like a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Zuccarello's in there. He's like 5'7" or 8", whatever he is, throwing his weight around. Stepan, I've liked for 2 years now. Love the way that kid plays. They're playing a little bit physical. They're not bruisers, but they're in there mixing it up. They're moving the puck. Their own end defensive abilities that they've shown have been outstanding.
Yeah.
If you're a Ranger fan, you now know – We have the great goaltender. When the team's playing well for him, he's the best. Good defensive pairs, you know, with you know, guys like Girardi and Staal, who I love. Strawman's been playing really well. Now this lead line where you can take some of that pressure off of Richards and these other guys to skate on secondary lines, I think they're going to be going places. I like them at the beginning of the year. You know, I wrote the article where I said they're going to have over 100 points this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So to look at the struggles has been – it's been striking.
But this is the team you thought you were going to see. Did you think of this line combination?
No.
This is the type of team where they'd have some balanced offense,
yeah.
they'd have, you know, strong defense, and they'll have a
solid defense. And everybody, what's funny, man, is everybody trashed Vigneault on that road trip, the head coach. And, okay, I get it, whatever. What he has shown, there were Tortorella supporters.
Oh, yeah.
And Tortorella, all he did was crush Kreider's confidence.
Yeah.
Killed on Zuccarello not being a two-way guy.
Almost ran Brad Richards out of town.
Essentially did. I mean, a healthy scratch in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do you want to do with the guy? And here's Stefan, and he's essentially, like I wrote in the article, he said, let's take these three young kids. They're all good. They're all different kinds of players. Stefan's a playmaker. Kreider's a goal scorer. Zuccarello kind of does a little bit of everything. He's speedy. A lot of people, I would have thought they'd put Carl Hagelin on that line.
Yeah.
But he has not done that. I give him oodles of credit for being creative as a head coach and saying, you know what, the hell with everybody else. Screw everybody's opinions.
At this point, everybody hates me anyway.
Right. I'm going off the grid. Watch this nutty line I'm putting together with these three young guys.
Yeah. And not like a Magic style.
Right. They're not playing 10 minutes a night. They're playing 18, 19 minutes a night.
Yeah.
It's been – I would give him all the credit in the world for having the stones to put together that line and go with it and just say, what the hell, we stink.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, let's put these three together and see what goes on.
All right, well, I think we got things back up and running on our website, so I do want to get to some callers that are waiting patiently. We're going to go out to line one, a caller calling in from New York. Here, I'm with the Tri-State Sports Guys, Mike and Dan. Who's this?
Am I on?
You are on. You are on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who we got?
Oh, yeah. Tortorella, Zuccarello, why don't we just make a pizza and call it a day? I don't understand why hockey is not more popular than it is.
I'll let Dan answer that because Dan is a guy who I think that hockey proactively keeps themselves to this tight-knit, like, diehards, and that's what it is, and they like that, and they don't want to expand to the masses. Dan has a different opinion. What do you think, Dan?
First of all, I think this guy's a fantastic caller.
He's already your favorite.
I'd like to hear from him every week.
Thanks, man. I have thoughts
on why hockey. What's that?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have thoughts on why
the NHL hasn't taken off, and I think a lot of it is most people in the States don't really follow the game enough to understand it. And sports,
right. It's
like for me watching cricket. If you don't know what the hell's going on, then why?
Surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. If they went out there.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Apparently, we lost connection again.
Oh, yeah?
Because they only heard a partial call from that guy. Maybe we took that call and it just crashed the Internet.
Yeah, that's good.
So we didn't hear any of us just talking about the intricacies of hockey.
Yeah.
That's something we're never going to get back.
Because
clearly it's not even going to be recorded. So this is a great show.
I made some brilliant points.
You really did.
And it's going to be lost on everyone but you, and you don't even care.
I care.
Do you care?
I do. I told you, I really want to watch hockey.
You're right.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into some college football.
Okay.
Hockey or college football, if both games are on, a game you really want to watch in hockey or a real game you really want to watch in college football, what are you watching?
College football.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I realized this weekend why I'm more of an NFL guy than a college football guy. And I think it's when college football is really good and there's a game that it's a very competitive game, it's awesome. And it might be better than the NFL. But they're too few and far between. There's too many blowouts in college football. There's too many games. Like, you know, you give your picks and it's 31-point spread, 28-point spread, and there's too many of these games where it's just like, the game's over. Why am I watching? Why am I going to sit here and watch Ohio State win 65-0? Why am I going to watch, you know, Johnny Manziel just running up the score on an awful UTEP team? Like, why? And it seems like there's too many of those. So maybe there are one good game, but that's why I could watch just about any NFL game. But in contrast, I could probably only watch a handful of college football games a week, if any, maybe two or three.
Yep.
You get that point? I mean, it seems like it's just – and that's just the nature of college sports. I mean, there's always going to be, you know, crappy teams. There's just not enough players to go around and recruiting and all that, scholarships. But I'm always fascinated that people just love college football so much more when, you know, 80% of the games that are televised on any given weekend aren't watchable because they're blowouts, unless you're betting on them.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people talk about parity. There's a ton of parity in college football, and people say that. And when you really look at it, there's essentially like 10 really good teams.
Yeah. And they don't play each other very often.
Out of 120. I mean.
Unless you're watching an SEC game, they don't play each other.
Right. So, I mean, I get tired of that every year, people saying like, oh, geez, look how good UCLA is this year. And I've mentioned that I think UCLA is a good football team, but if UCLA went to the vast majority of the teams in the top 10 on the road, they're going to be probably getting 14 to 24 points. They were getting 24 points at Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's two of the top three teams, four teams in the Pac-12. So everybody talks about so many good teams. There's not. There's 10 really good teams, three or four great teams, six or seven good teams, and the rest, you can hit or miss.
It's hit or miss. Yeah,
so
you might get a game out of Kentucky or Arkansas one week or whatever, and maybe there's a player you want to watch. If you want to watch Teddy Bridgewater, mostly when I want to watch Louisville because you're wondering how this guy can really be a pro. You know, same thing with, like, Geno Smith. Like, I'd watch West Virginia games because you hear this guy's going to be a top 10 pick at one point, and you want to see him play.
Right.
You know, I watched a bunch of the A&M game, even though they're playing UTEP, because it's like I want to see Johnny Manziel. I'll give you the real deal and that type of thing. So a part of me it just gets frustrated in that aspect of it. It's not like I don't like college football. I do. I mean, I do like to watch. I just like to watch good games. And even when you get to bowl season, you see crazy spreads and crazy blowouts. So it's not like it gets any better then.
There's too many bowl games now.
Well,
I mean, that's a different discussion. But
well, you want, you just want to add majors to the golf tournament, you know, season.
Just one.
Just one major. Just
not plural. Singular one.
You want to have a 14-year-old and under tournament and the PGA Tour.
I want to play golf with that kid. Let's talk about that next week for
20 minutes. Well, get him on. I'm sure the guy who books our guests with Sean is fantastic. We can get this guy on.
Absolutely.
Why couldn't we get that kid on? Get him in studio.
If David Faraday could get Billy Casper on the show, Billy Casper never does interviews, then Tim Lingwan, the 14-year-old, would love to come on the show. So
that's all he wants to do.
Yeah, let's tell our guy who gets guys to come on our show.
We got a guy who gets guys.
Yeah.
Can we get – what's his name?
Tim Lingwan.
Yeah, fantastic answer.
He's got it.
He knows the score. Yeah. All right, so let's get into our debate. And we posted something quickly on the website today about who we want to see. Now, there's always – you know, what's interesting about this season is, you know, there's five teams that clearly have aspirations, maybe even six. You know, so they could say, like, oh, you know, we might go undefeated and we're not going to have a shot. It seems to be that way every year. You remember it last year, and then teams started losing towards the end of the year. So I think it's too early to start, you know, just predicting, like, oh, we're going to have four undefeated teams here, and, you know, Ohio State's going to be crap out of luck, and either Oregon or Florida State's not. So I think it's too early to really predict who we think is going to get there, although that's another good debate. I think it's more interesting to say, like, who do we want to see get there?
Yeah.
And, you know, like last year, everybody complained about the national championship game because the two best teams didn't necessarily play in it. But in any sport, you get to a championship game, very rarely are the two best teams in baseball meet up in the World Series. Very rarely do they meet up in the Super Bowl. You know, there's teams that, you know, you always see. Look at 15-1 Packers from a few years ago, couldn't get past the Giants. So you see that all the time. So it's not necessarily like, oh, the two best teams always meet up and college football gets it wrong. But I think as a fan, I mean, you're much more – we're a different type of college football fan. I just described what I like and what I dislike about college football. You're more of a diehard. So who are the two teams – and you've written articles about it and you mentioned it. But the people that didn't read the articles, who are the two teams you want to see as a fan? And then, you know, I don't think Kansas is making it, so I don't, or Army, so I don't think you're going to really get to see one of your teams. So who do you want to see?
Well, I mean, I wrote in the article, and I reiterated it in the one today. It's for me, it's Oregon and it's Alabama, and it's for a multitude of reasons. But chief among them really is Saban. His defensive coordinator, Kirby Smart, is probably as good as anybody in the country. Maybe Bud Foster, B Tech, has been better for a long time, but I don't know. But Mark Helfrich takes over for Chip Kelly. Ducks haven't missed a beat out in Eugene. It's the old school way Alabama does things with the old school formations versus the new age, up-tempo, fast-paced way the Ducks play. And you give a guy like Saban, who hasn't always had a tremendous amount of success against spread offenses, you give him in a national championship game roughly 5 or 6 weeks to prepare for the Ducks. And if that game comes to fruition, people will talk about Saban, Saban, Saban. I think it's more interesting even to see what Helfrich would do. If he can get by Stanford tomorrow, he's got the Civil War with Oregon State.
You have any idea what that spread is in that game?
I don't know what the spread is in that game, and I'm ashamed that I don't, but I forgot to pick up the paper on my way here tonight.
It's not like you. I'll tell you what, we didn't come in with show prep, we don't have a producer, and we've been dropping calls. And you want to bring your face.
I still think it's our best show ever.
100%.
Yeah.
The best show ever. It's a fantastic show.
Right. And on top of that, I think AJ McCarron, he just gets overlooked. Like, he's some guy.
He's going to be undrafted. Like, they're like, ah, it's just AJ McCarron.
He's just an average quarterback. And Greg McElroy gets drafted. And like you said, people are talking about McCarron might not even get drafted, or he's not, you know.
Yeah, no, he's not. Nobody looks at that guy. He's like, you want to know what the spread is in that game at Stanford? What's your guess? It's like a handicap. I'm looking at now on Bovada.lv.
I'm going to say Oregon laying 14.
11.
Yeah.
11 points. That's a lot, like, to me. If you are listening to us live, which if you've hung through our Trek and Grip Fellows, God bless you. But we're going to be dropping off live shortly. We're going to get some bonus time for those of you listening on download. Check us out, as always, TriStateSportsGuys.com or Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys or at TriState_sports on Twitter. So, yeah, it's 11-point spread there. So, you know, clearly the fact that they're playing at Stanford's not really swaying Vegas at all, and I think that means plenty of people are betting heavy on Oregon. So, assuming they get through that game, you think, I mean, this is a huge test for a first-year head coach over at, you know, at Oregon, you know, in that kind of stage. I could see that chess match being very interesting, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Saban. Saban's going to game plan as good as anyone's going to game plan in the nation. And so you're not, you know what you're going to get. It's just a matter of the chess match between two head coaches. And that's why I say time and time again that, you know, head coaches in football – by far are the most important in all of sports because, you know, and in coordinators, offensive and defensive, the chess game that goes out within the game, but you get into like a game plan and, you know, one of the things we talk about with like Rex Ryan, every game has got a different game plan. I think Saban has got his strengths. He knows what he's got. You know, I think it's going to be a fantastic matchup. I went with Alabama, Florida State, more so because just as a straight fan, I got to see this Jameis Winston kid.
Yeah.
Now, I want to see Alabama because I like dynasties. Love them.
Yep.
That's why I had a debate with O early on when we started the show of why Major League Baseball should never have a salary cap because it's so good for baseball to have the teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees just throwing crazy money out there because it's always good to have a David and a Goliath. And typically in these sports, you don't see the two Goliaths meet. Now, when you got a team in college football be able to put together a stretch that Alabama has, after really having a long, you know, tenure of not being Alabama football, come back, being a storied program, come back and just dominate the football landscape like they've dominated, you want to see them up there and you want to see a team try to knock them off. Now, I agree with you to an extent that chess match between Oregon and what they provide on offense against what Nick Saban does on defense is very interesting. But I like the fact of, like, FSU, you know, we were in middle school, high school, was one of the best programs in the country. They, again, had some down times. And now they're coming back based on, the arm of Jameis Winston, in addition to a fantastic defense. I mean, you're talking about, you know, you're going to look at – everybody's going to want to talk about Jameis Winston, but that defense of Florida State can go toe-to-toe with any offense in the nation. You know, I mean, you want to talk about chess matches, it wouldn't be crazy if somehow Alabama gets knocked off to think that, man, an Oregon Florida State national championship would be fantastic.
Yeah,
like that little chess match.
You know what amazes me is no one gives Jimbo Fisher any credit down there as the head coach because I think a lot of it has to do with what you kind of said, which is you expect Florida State to be good.
Yeah.
So when a guy comes in there and does a good job, I mean, when you were talking about Alabama, like when Gene Stallings finally had his struggles and Mike Shula came in and he crapped the bed or whatever, people go, Alabama can't possibly fall from grace this fast, but they did. Florida State in Bobby Bowden's last 4 years, I think he was winning an average of like 7 games.
Yeah,
he was
7-5 team,
And that's all it was. Jimbo Fisher comes in as the head coach in waiting, takes over for Bowden, clearly a legend. And you look at what he's done in just, which is his fourth year, I think. It's exceptionally impressive. He's landing top recruiting classes, which people think it's easy to do that in Florida because of all the talent in Florida, but they forget you're recruiting against Miami and Florida, the SEC and ACC schools. Kids like that go to the Big 12 now and play at places like Texas and OK State and stuff like that. And I just think it's time that people give Fisher some credit because he looks like the good old Southern boys, got the little Southern drawl or whatever wherever he's from.
Yeah.
And people are like, he's just winning at Florida State, but they weren't. They weren't.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
The
and he had so much pressure on
him.
Taking over for a legend, of a team that really was just sputtering, you know, just a mediocre team, and just taking over and making them a powerhouse. And, you know, in addition to all of that, in addition to their great defense, which is fun to watch, you got this Jameis Winston kid with, in addition to all of his, you know, attributes physically, which are amazing, you know, and he throws a 98-mile-hour fastball and could get drafted in the first round if he wanted to. He's such a likable guy.
Yeah.
He's so the anti-Johnny Football to me. You watch him, he's got his own little handshake with Jimbo Fisher's son. You ever see that little thing they do? And, you know, you read articles about him. He's like a goofball off the field, but he's like super, you know, into all of these things. And, you know, the SI article, he wanted to be a podiatrist because his mom and dad had bunions and they used to go to their doctor's appointment.
Right.
Yeah, and so it's like he's such a likable guy, you know. And it's like, God, that would be, to me, he's got to be on the biggest stage. You know, I don't see how they're going to get there, because once Oregon wins this game tomorrow night, what is FSU going to do to overtake that? Nothing, right? I mean, they don't have a Stanford left on their schedule.
Well, what you have there is, first of all, you have Florida State's currently ranked second in the BCS.
Mm-hmm. I know, yeah.
Florida State's got that going for them. Florida State's going to have Florida in Gainesville, and Florida State's going to have a crack at an ACC title game if things play out the way that they look like they might. With Oregon, you have a deal. If they win tomorrow, which I think they will,
they're going to get thrust in the two. I think they're going to.
It's going to look like that. You got to watch out for that Oregon State game. I've heard that before. You know, Mike Riley's a pretty good coach. He's had some success up there. They lost a terrible game to Eastern Washington, Division I AA school, to start the season off. And they've battled enough to get back in the top 25, and they're out of the top 25, then they're back or whatever. I'm pretty sure that game's in Eugene at Oregon. So, it's not going to be an easy test for Oregon State. Does it look like Oregon's going to go undefeated? Yes. Does it look like Alabama's going to go undefeated? Yeah. I mean, I said last week that I think Auburn, that no one's giving any credit. I think they got one loss, 7-1, 8-1, wherever they are. That game is at Auburn.
Yeah.
That could be a game where Auburn goes, hey, we got a shot to possibly win the SEC West and go to the SEC championship game if they can win out. You know, I mentioned in my article today that Baylor is an undefeated team.
Yeah.
With a very
tough game. They had a big game. Who did they play this week, Oklahoma?
They're playing Oklahoma. They have Texas Tech next week at Cowboy Stadium. They still have TCU and Texas. They have a lot of teams that they've only played seven games. They're one of the only teams that's played seven. And you go, boy, if Art Briles' team, I mean, they got Lachey Seastrunk, outstanding running back. The quarterback, Bryce Petty, threw for 450 yards 2 weeks in a row. They put up almost 800 yards on West Virginia.
Yeah.
And people look at it like it's this gimmicky offense. But you wonder, it'd be interesting to see. There's nothing to dislike about Baylor. They're extremely entertaining. If they can keep winning, then win, you know, a big game against Texas to end the year. Texas is undefeated in the Big 12, 6-2 overall. You go, who knows? And then who's left in the dark holding the bag is Ohio State.
Yeah.
Because they have no one left.
But don't you think there's a little bit of poetic justice there that, you know, Ohio State fans had no pity for Boise State back when Ohio State was winning these games. And, we play all these things. Nobody would have been, you know, ever dreamed that that conference would have fallen to what it's fallen to.
Yeah.
And so, to me, for whatever reason, Ohio State is one of those teams that I just can't stand. I hated Jim Tressel. I just can't stand Ohio State. So I would love nothing more than to just them go undefeated and just play a meaningless BCS game that nobody cares about. And while, you know, these guys are playing for national championships. I mean, you get that same sense. I just love that.
I dislike Tressel. I hated his little sweater vest.
Even though you know I pull off sweater vests very well. Have you ever seen me in a sweater vest? Maybe next week I'll wear a sweater vest.
Will you do that for me?
I can go plain, like a solid color or argyle, whatever you need. I got my whole closet full of them.
You look like you're on your way to go paintballing. Anything would be an improvement. Put on like a gentleman. No, I agree with you. Tressel, never liked him. I've always liked Urban Meyer. I always have. And I didn't like the fact that Ohio State, those kids last year, being punished for going undefeated. I never liked that kind of stuff because you look at it and go, Tressel was a clown. Guys like Terrell Pryor are the ones that made those decisions, and then the team was undefeated. And they're probably going to go undefeated this year. They got Iowa and Indiana, and then they're going to go to the Big House, and Michigan stinks. So, I don't think they even have a game. If they go to the Big Ten championship game, which it looks like they will, they're going to play with Michigan State?
Yeah.
I mean, what flagship team are they going to play that's going to vault them up the standings? So you look at it and go, Alabama, Oregon, Florida State. Those are the three, I think. And then you go Baylor. If they go undefeated, should have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But their schedule's still tough, and Oklahoma's a good team this week. They got five good teams left. Will they go undefeated? I mean, probably not. They're going to put up probably 300 points in those five games, it seems, you know. But yeah, I mean, I don't feel bad for Ohio State when they get the rub of the knee that goes against them, really.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me either. All right, well, I mean, there's really no way to know whether we're on the air right now. I think we are. I hope we are, because we just broke down on college football as good as anybody.
Yeah.
Kirk Herbstreit, anybody.
Will you tell me one thing, though?
What?
You taking the 11 points tomorrow night at Stanford? You seem like you want to.
No, not at all.
Yeah, don't.
No, not at all. That's an Oregon. It's another, like, unwatchable game. That's what I'm talking about. Everybody's hyping up this game. Like, it's a big Thursday night game. You got the two big. I'd rather watch the Baylor game, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Tomorrow, right? 7:30?
Yeah. I'd rather watch the Baylor game than the Oregon. I don't think that's going to be a game at all. I'll be completely honest with you. But, all right, well, thank you for listening, as always. Sorry to the callers that did call in. We weren't able to get to. We did have some technical difficulties. Hopefully next week we do our live show from O'Neill's. We have a full crew on board. We'll get Neil calling in from Hoboken. He'll be, you know, Hollywood movie star by then.
Yeah.
But thank you, Dan, for joining us again and then just breaking down hockey and college football, which everyone wants to talk about here in the Northeast.
Except Mike Francesa.
Except Francesa. Yeah. All right, we are the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out, as always, tristatesportsguys.com. Or like us on Tri-State, or on Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. Check us out next week. We'll be back.